May it please the Court, my name is David Beauvais. I am the attorney for the appellant in this matter, Robert Norris. We're before the Court on a very simple set of facts with very, very serious possible consequences to our liberties as citizens, as Americans. And basically what this case involves is how far can a city go to regulate a public meeting which is statutorily open to the public for citizens to communicate and interact with their elected public officials.
Are you making a facial challenge or an as-applied challenge?
We're making both. I was going to discuss first the as-applied challenge, the facial challenge. The rules are so loosely written and encompass such sweeping proscription of speech that it is stunning that any city would adopt these kinds of rules. They absolutely prohibit referring to any council member by name. They do not allow criticism of any council or any member of the council in violation of state law under the government code.
Now, how do you get around White versus City of Norwalk? Hasn't that already been decided in this circuit?
Well, the White case certainly involved an ordinance as opposed to rules of decorum, from which it is obvious that the City of Santa Cruz lifted some language, some phraseology. But the language structure of the rules of decorum is quite different from the language structure of the ordinance in White. In White, the court interpreted the slanderous, impertinent language to be disruptive in order for there to be an expulsion from the meeting.
Did you say this court interpreted that way, or is it the city that interpreted that?
Both. This court adopted the city's interpretation. It acknowledged the ambiguity of the ordinance and said since the city has said that we're not going to try to enforce this ordinance unless there's actual disruption, we're going to adopt that interpretation.
Now, didn't the city say the same thing here?
No.
It didn't?
It did not.
What do you make of the language in the city's brief where they say virtually the same thing on page 4? The rules require a disturbance. Isn't that the city's interpretation of the ordinance, that some disruption is required?
Well, they refer to White. Okay, yeah. It says that the city's rules allow for a similar interpretation. I don't agree with that. I don't think they do. But assuming that that's an admission that that's how they're going to act in the future, it doesn't say they are. It just says that it allows for that interpretation. This is not a blanket statement. We do not intend to enforce these rules unless there's actual disruption.
Is it different in quality than the, the city's position in Norwalk?
It is. In Norwalk, the city said, we are going to interpret the rules to require disruption. The city of Santa Cruz has never said that. In fact, my recollection is that during oral argument on the motion to dismiss, they declined to take that position. They were point blank asked by the district court judge if they required disruption. And they skirted the issue. And then in a footnote to the district court's opinion, the court says this would be a much easier case if the city would just adopt such a construction. But for the reasons that I stated in our opening brief, there's no way that these rules can be read to require disruption, because there's reference to expulsion in the first paragraph of the rules, and there's a reference to expulsion in the third paragraph of the rules. And the third paragraph is where you have that language, otherwise disrupts, which infers that the words coming before it implies that the words coming before it have to be disruptive as well. But the structure of it is so totally different. And the other really distinguishing fact about this case is that there's no provision for a warning. And so once someone says something, it's too late. They're already expelled from the meeting. And it's not fair not to give a warning. particularly in a case like this where it's not so obvious that what's being done here is disruptive. In fact, it was not disruptive. That was the fact of it. What was disruptive was the mayor's reaction to the actions that were taken by Mr. Norse. And then that's where the disruption began.
But let me ask you this. This technically, this procedurally, I find this case a little confusing, so help me out. This is technically a motion to dismiss, but there are a lot of materials here beyond what is normally regarded as pleadings. We know what the rules are. We know we have agendas. We have a lot. Are there disputes of fact here, or what would you have?
There's a couple of disputes of fact. First of all,
material. Would you identify what they are?
Well, I'm not sure that I would call them material. They could be, depending on what legal framework is adopted. The one dispute that's significant is whether or not the silent Nazi salute was made during the public comment period or after the public comment period. And that's based on that Topeka, Kansas case, I believe, where the court makes a bright line distinction between public comment as being an open public forum, the rest of the meeting not having that characteristic. That's another circuit. I'm not sure that distinction makes a lot of difference, but our complaint alleges that the motion was made during public comment. And I think that for purposes of 12b-6, the court's bound by that allegation. And it's the defendants argue otherwise, but I think that's a question that should be dealt with in discovery and motions for summary judgment or whatever. So we would ask that the court adopt our interpretation of that. With respect to other incidents, there were a number of documents which the defendants asked the court to take judicial notice of, which involved prior incidents. We're not sure why those were put into evidence. The district court didn't deal with that, but they do tend to prove, do tend to show that there was some animus against Mr. Norse, and that possibly had someone else done the same precise same activity, that they would not have been ejected from the meeting.
You take those into account because that cuts both ways.
They do. Yeah, they do. I don't know what you can do with them. Let's assume that he's a gadfly. They didn't like him. This was the only incident that occurred at this meeting. And I don't think he comes in there with two strikes, and this is the third strike.
Well, everything you said, just, you know, any possible factual disputes pertains only to the as-applied challenge. Mm-hmm. It doesn't apply to the facial challenge.
No, it doesn't apply to the facial challenge. You know, we think it's just obvious from this case that there was no disruption at all as required by In Re K. And just very briefly on qualified immunity, In Re K is a 30-some-odd-year-old case. There are statutes that govern the right of citizens to attend public meetings. There's a statute which governs their right to speak and criticize the council. Those were both violated. And we believe that First Amendment law in general and some of the analogies made in our brief, for example, Tinker versus Des Moines School District, we think is particularly apt here. Except they wore their bands all day. This was a one-second incident. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
You may. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. George Kovacevic for the City of Santa Cruz. Today I want to address a couple points and then, of course, answer any questions you have, but at least that's what I start out with, but now I want to deal with a couple points also that Mr. Bouvet raised. First of all, with respect to issues of fact, I do think the lower court could take judicial notice of the minutes as we submitted by declaration and also by points and authorities in the court below. And I didn't bring those with me, and I apologize at that point, but it's part of the record, and I think it's substantiated by Ninth Circuit cases in terms of what's judicially noticed. Secondly, look at the complaint itself, which is in appellant's excerpt. Paragraph 9 reads, on March 12th, plaintiff attended a public meeting of the Santa Cruz City Council during oral communications, a period when members of the public are allowed to address the council. A woman stood at the podium and began to speak. Defendant Crone, who's the mayor, told her that public comment was over and that she would not be permitted to speak. So I think the facts, as alleged in the complaint, establish that public comment was over. I mean, the only person that can dictate that is the mayor. And so we have to take that at its face value to the extent that it's over. With respect to the position of the city in this particular case, I don't know why the judge below said that in his opinion. With respect to if the city, something effective, the city would take a position, because this is what transpired in the moving papers below. In the city's reply, I stated, contrary to plaintiff's assertion at page 7 of plaintiff's memorandum, and that was their opposition brief, in which they stated, quote, the defendants in this case have not urged the court to limit the reach of these rules to speech that causes disruption, and the allegations in plaintiff's complaint reveal the defendants have not enforced the rules with that idea in mind, close quote. I responded in my reply brief, defendants, quote, as did the city in the city of Norwalk case, pro-offered this court a construction of the rules to which they are readily susceptible and in accordance with city of Norwalk. And then I went on to discuss how the language of disruption operates within the context of our rules.
What did you offer?
I offered the fact that the word destruction at the end.
Well, read me what you offered. You say, we offered so-and-so, and then you stop. What did you offer?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I didn't bring that brief with me.
Well, then how are we supposed to know what you offered?
Well, basically what I offered is that it requires an actual destruction, a disruption, just like the city of Norwalk case interpreted and the city conceded there, that you had to have an actual disruption.
So you're saying now the city's position, as you explicated in the district court, is that the ordinance requires actual disruption of the meeting in order for there to be a violation? Is that your position?
Yes.
All right. Now, then with respect to the as-applied challenge, do you agree there's a question of fact as to whether there was an actual disruption?
I don't.
Well, what was the disruption?
The disruption was, first of all, speaking when he didn't have a right to speak.
Wait a minute. I understand he was silent.
Pardon?
I understand he was silent. He didn't say a word.
Well,
he didn't even stand up.
I thought it was just a salute.
Yeah.
I understand, Your Honor. But
what's the disruption? So what's the disruption?
I took that as speech. If that's not speech.
Well, what's the disruption? How did that, let's assume it's speech, how did that disrupt the meeting? I understand the mayor didn't even notice it.
I'm sorry?
I understand the mayor did not even notice it.
Well, I understand, but I guess it's a question of what we describe as disruption. If it's contrary to the rules, do we just not do anything about it?
Well, it's contrary. You just said it's contrary only if there's a disruption. And my question, I mean, you're talking in circles. What is the disruption?
Well, what I'm trying to say, and if I could take us through this, if somebody did something in the back of this courtroom silently, but with gestures, And he wasn't supposed to be speaking at that time in any fashion, then I see that as a disruption. Because the point is, these rules are inherently such that if you don't go by the procedure, it's a disruption.
Well, maybe what you're really arguing is that the mere invocation of a Nazi salute in a public meeting like this equals disruption.
Equals. It equals because of the forum that we're in.
Even if this were in the public comment period, or does it have to be outside?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I suggest that it has to be. It can be either, and the reason is again, and I point out to the Supreme Court case which this court cited in Kind, that control over access to a non-public forum can be based on subject matter and speaker identity so long as the distinctions drawn are reasonable in light of the purpose served by the forum. The purpose of public comment is not to trash a fellow person in the audience. It's not to trash.
Not to criticize the action of the council or the mayor. It's not to express disagreement. I don't understand it.
Well, I suggest it isn't, but I don't think we need to go there, and I don't want to take the court on or have the court take me on that issue. But because the reason I say I don't think we need to go there is because he wasn't even speaking rightfully at that time. If he was in public comment at the podium, recognized, and said, I think you guys run a place like this, then we would have a different issue. And I suggest to you, and you probably have intimated to me, that I would have a harder position to argue with you. But that's not where we're at. He wasn't there. So he's completely outside the rules at that point. And when you're outside the rules, you're disruptive. It's the nature of the beast. Otherwise, why have the rules? What purpose do the rules serve if you can act contrary to the rules?
Remind me again, what happened with the lady who got up to speak?
He told her that public comment was closed, oral communications were closed, and that if she didn't leave, she would be escorted out, and she left. And that's the proper way to act.
I think here we're not talking so much about, you know, what purpose does the rule serve. But the question is it in conformance with the First Amendment? And in the city of Norwalk, the city's position there was that the ordinance does not permit removal or punishment of a person who merely utters, quote, a personal, impertinent, slanderous or profane remark. And that's all that happened here. A person uttered what, you know, some would consider a profane or slanderous remark.
Well, but
and in the city of Norwalk, the city conceded that alone is not sufficient to violate the ordinance.
But
and you're not making that concession here.
I don't think that was in the context of where the meeting was.
That makes a difference?
I think it does, because it changes the equation of what's the disruption.
Well, I'm still trying to find out what was the disruption. And you're saying the mere utterance of the speech, you know, the fleeting two-second speech was itself disruptive.
I'm saying, first of all, he had no right to speak at that point.
Well, of course.
He wasn't.
I mean,
wasn't
that's a given, but the question is, was that speech disruptive? And you haven't given me, a satisfactory answer.
Well, I guess because the... maybe we disagreed. I hope not, in terms of what constitutes a disruption. My point is, and one of the other justices indicated that if you make that in this case that sign at a time that you're not allowed to do so, then it's disruptive. I mean, it's just like a child.
You know, you're just equating disruption with the violation of the non-speaking rule. To you, it's a per se disruption.
Well, that's why I cited and I took the analogy from the Scroggins case that talked about the purpose of these rules have an inherent orderliness to them. And if you don't comply with the rules, it's not orderly. I equate not orderly with disruption. Now, it's not in the sense, and I know, Your Honor, it's not as easy to see, because we don't have someone who is absolutely berserk and creating complete havoc. I understand that, but I'm asking you to go down to the next level of looking at the importance of these rules. The importance of these rules are to keep it orderly and structured. And if you do those kinds of things, it distorts the rules. And that's the disruption.
Well, there's a balancing here.
Okay. And also, lastly, I would like to indicate in terms of... absolute immunity, I would like the court to maybe bite the bullet on that and take that issue on. Hansen indicated it's not a closed issue. It's still an open issue. And I, of course, cited Collison versus Gott and Judge Wilkinson's, I think, rather insightful analysis that whether it's public session, oral communication or not, it's all part of the public meeting, which is equivalent with the legislative policy making.
Are you talking about legislative immunity or yes. qualified no, no. immunity for the officer?
Absolute immunity for legislatures.
Some cases limit that to, like, legislative debate, right?
Yes.
But I understand you're raising the issue.
Right? I am.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. You have more than used your time.
Just very briefly, as it must be, with 1 minute, 15 seconds left.
Okay, we'll give you 2 minutes because we let him go.
Okay, that's fine. I don't think I have even that much to say at this point, except to point out that we think there would have been a different result at the city council meeting had Mr. Norris come in with a sign saying, re-elect Mayor Crone. And it's because of the content of his message that... that he was sanctioned by the mayor. I would also ask that the court look very carefully at the structure of these.
What is the basis for your assertion? What does the court look to test the validity of that assertion?
Well, I think you could look to the rules, which basically prohibit criticism of members of the council, but don't prohibit at the same time adulation of members of the council. So,
well, if the rule is to be enforced according to its terms, presumably it would make no difference if the sign said re-elect versus out with the mayor.
Shouldn't make any difference, but the rules are tailored in a way that prohibits criticism without at the same time prohibiting communication that would be laudatory of the council members. Find that to be an interesting...
Are you relying on language in the ordinance? I can understand the suspicion that might pervade here, but we have to look at the language of the ordinance itself, don't we?
Right. I believe, and I don't have them right, the rules right in front of me. I thought they were attached to my brief, but I didn't see them in my copy. But I think there was some language in there about... defamatory or slanderous statements toward council members are prohibited. So you can't slander, but you certainly could say things that may be untrue but might improve their reputations.
Because they're prohibited doesn't mean they're necessarily disruptive. But what's your response to your opponent's assertion about what was in his reply brief before the district court? As with respect to, you know, the ordinance, including the element of disruption.
As I recall, the district court, during oral argument, he did not commit the city to interpreting the rules in the fashion that the Santa Monica did. But the other part of that, of course, is our argument that you can't interpret them that way. They're not subject to that. They're not ambiguous. They do not require disruption.
If I understand it, though, their argument is that this was a disruption. So I'm not sure that you've been hurt by something that is broader than the disruption. But can I ask you another question?
Sure.
The city said that that this was clearly after the public comment period. Because someone had told the woman who got up before
the mayor
that it was beyond. But as I understand, he says that's undisputed. But as I understand your complaint, you allege that the woman stood at the podium during the period that people are allowed to speak, and that when she was told that the comment period was over, she protested that it wasn't over, and your client then, at that point, did the salute. So
right. It
would appear from that there is a dispute as to whether or not the comment period was over or not.
We agree that there's a dispute about that.
I know you don't agree that it's material because you have a facial challenge, but
right. We're
back to that.
There was a question, and this is not, I don't think, really developed by the record, but there is a question as to whether the mayor cut short a speech that he should not have cut short because a certain amount of time is allocated and the mayor may have cut short before the time was over.
Yeah.
I think it needs to be dealt with in discovery.
Okay.
Thanks.
The case just argued is submitted for decision.